Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 17, Description of Vanashram System, Text 11.
Veda pranava eva agre,
Veda pranava eva agre,
Dharmoham
vrishorupadrik,
Upashate taponista,
Tamsang
mam mukta kiyubhisha, Veda pranava eva agre,
Veda pranava eva agre,
Dharmoham vrishorupadrik, Upashate taponista, Tamsang mam mukta kiyubhisha,
Veda, the Veda, Pranava, the sacred syllable Om, Eva, indeed, Agre, in Satya Yuga,
Dharma,
the object of mental activities. Aham, I, Vrishyarupadrik, bearing the form of the bull of religion, Upasate, the worship, Tapanista,
fixed in austerity,
Hamsham,
Lord Hamsha,
Mam, me, Mukta,
freed from
Kilbisa,
all sins.
Translation, it's Satya Yuga. And the undivided Veda is expressed by the syllable Om. And I am the only object of mental activities. I become manifest as the four-legged bull of religion, and thus the inhabitants of Satya Yuga, fixed in austerity, and free from all sins, worship me as Lord Hamsa. In Satya Yuga, the uninvited Veda is expressed by the syllable Om, and I am the only object of mental activities. I become manifest as the four-legged bull of religion, and thus the inhabitants of Satya Yuga, fixed in austerity and free from all sins, worship me as Lord Hamsa. Purport. The bull of religion is described in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.17.24. Tapasa ocham daya satyam iti parakrit kritaha. In the edge of Satya, truthfulness, your four legs were established by the four principles of austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. Sri Vyasadev divided the one Veda into four, the Rig, Yajur, Sama, and Atharva Vedas, at the end of Dwapara Yuga. But in Satya Yuga, the whole of Vedic knowledge is easily understood by everyone simply by vibrating the syllable Om. In this age, there are no ritualistic or pious activities such as sacrifice, since everyone is sinless, austere, and fully engaged in worshipping the personality of Godhead Lord Hamsa through the process of meditation. So, Uddhava, Uddhava is questioning Lord Krishna. Actually, this part of Srimad Bhagavatam is interesting because 11th canto. This part of the 11th canto is, does anyone know what this part of the 11th canto is special? Right? Uddhava Gita. Yeah. Do you know what Uddhava Gita resembles? It was spoken somewhere else. Yes. Uddhava Gita is just the basically repetition of the Bhagavad Gita. There's even the same verse. Krishna actually repeats the same thing. And the reason that Krishna speaks to Uddhava is because he tried to appease Uddhava's mind. And why was Uddhava's mind disturbed? Krishna was about to leave the planet. And Sugata Bhagavatam describes, he said, Dharma Gyana Dibi Saha. Krishna Dhamma Upagate. When Krishna leaves Krishna Dharma, when Krishna returns to his abode, there's two things that follow Krishna. What are they?
Dharma and
Gyana. Dharma and Gyana. So Dharma is going with Krishna and Gyan is going with Krishna. So the knowledge how to acquire Dharma is living and Dharma itself is living. There is an interesting translation here, word for word, Prabhupada, disciple of Srila Prabhupada translated Dharma as the object of mental activity. So, as we know, the living entity is Ashritya, and Krishna is, what is Krishna?
Ashwaya.
The living entity is sheltered, whereas Krishna is the shelter. How does Krishna do this? Krishna does that by his energies. Krishna has many energies. But amongst them, he has Sandini, Ladini, and Samvit. Existentiality. Thank you. Cognizance and bliss. These are the living entity is made out of. But there is a verse in the Katha Upanishad that tells us that nityo nitya anam chitano chitana anam eko bahuda yo vidatati kamam, that although there are many living entities, but there's eko bahudi vidatati. Vidatati means to maintain. There are many living entities, but one living entity maintains all the other living entities. That is Krishna. So the living entity has a choice, a free will, to either be associated with the external energy of the Lord or to be associated with the internal energy of the Lord. So therefore, the living entity comes to this world, but when the living entity is in this world, it's completely deluded by the material energy. And the Vedas constantly teach that one should not be deluded by the external energy of the Lord, but instead should go towards light. So this is a description in the first canto of the living entity being like the moth. And as you know, when you can see the moth is flying and is coming close to the fire, is entering the fire and then gets burnt. So similarly, the living entity being deluded by the external energy becomes bewildered and becomes burnt, birth after birth. So Krishna himself says in the Bhagavad Gita that it is very difficult to overcome this external energy. Daivishi gunamai mama maya duratyaya. Krishna says it's actually impossible. But then he says it can be done if one surrenders unto me. So he says actually it can be done easily if one surrenders unto me. But to surrender unto the Supreme Lord, it is not so easy. But for those who have developed austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness, then it can be done. So therefore, in Satya Yuga, it is stated that Dharma is the object of mental activity. Because in Satya Yuga, every living being, at least from the cultural standing, was fully mentally dedicated to the Supreme Lord. I say the cultural standing because, of course, we know very well that deep inside the core of the heart, or even the inhabitants of Satya Yuga, there were desires which eventually would lead them to Treta Yuga, and then Dwapara Yuga, and eventually Kali Yuga. So cultural standing means this way of life which will uphold these four principles, namely truthfulness, mercy, cleanliness, and austerity. So if you see the within this, you can see the genius of Srila Prabhupada, how he created the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, who is actually an institution of cultural standing. Within the International Society of Krishna Consciousness, those four principles are upheld at all times. If one actually is austere, clean, merciful, and truthful, it will be actually easy to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, in order to do this, it is stated in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that one simply has to preach the Srimad Bhagavatam. By preaching Srimad Bhagavatam, one can actually uphold the principles of religion. So therefore, the Hare Krishna movement is simply preaching this Srimad Bhagavatam. But when one preaches Srimad Bhagavatam, not only one has to uphold the four principles of religion, but also promote them. And the idea of promoting the four legs of religion, this is actually unknown to the public. It's like when you present you ask people what is, some people say, someone told me the other day, what was it? He said someone was really confused about believing in God. So, you don't believe in God, you believe in God, I don't believe in God. Actually that person was believing in the Big Bang. He said, well, the Big Bang makes so much sense, you know, because you can read it, it's actually there, it's actually normal, you follow the Big Bang. And it makes sense. The scientists actually describe it very well. There's a book written by, I forgot who he told me, and actually the Big Bang makes sense. What would you want to believe in God? But then I told him that actually if you want to believe in anything or want to appreciate the value of something, you actually have to know what that something is. So then I told him about the definition of Parasaramuni, Bhagavan. And Bhagavan is he who possesses all opulences. So that is Krishna. Krishna possesses all opulences. Everyone, I said to that person, everyone is attracted by beauty. Everyone is attracted by fame, renunciation, wealth, intelligence, power. We cannot deny that those things are very attractive. But how attractive it would be to see all those opulences in the one person. So that is the definition of Bhagavan. And in Kali Yuga, these principles have disappeared. Austerity basically is the voluntary acceptance of bodily discomfort for the purpose of spiritual advancement, as described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So therefore, Prabhupada says in the first canto that simply we fast for Ekadasi, and twice a month we fast for Janmashtami, we fast for the various appearance days of the Lord. And cleanliness means cleanliness inside and outside. Outside is helpful, but inside means actually to glorify the Supreme Lord. That brings about cleanliness. And mercy is actually to be merciful to other living entities. The best way to be merciful to other living entities is to give them knowledge by which they can understand their own position and their position in relationship to the Supreme Lord. And truthfulness must be practiced in daily activities. And that is often tested, because sometimes we may find that being truthful can be painful, because sometimes you find that in children. When children get caught doing something, that they find some excuse, or I didn't do it, or something else. But even as adult, truthfulness is very important, because even if one is either fallen or has any kind of problems, to be truthful is actually the remedy. And we can see the power of the legs of religion, because if you have some trouble, just like Rupa Goswami described the six exchanges of love, that is to give prasadam, receive prasadam, give gifts, receive gifts, and reveal one's mind in confidence and hear in confidence. When one reveals one's mind in confidence, it means one must be truthful. Not that one claims to be some kind of platform that one is actually not. So to be truthful means that one will receive the help from his peers and within the spiritual movement from devotees. So here in this particular verse, it is this particular chapter, the main topic is about the Varnashram system. And oftentimes in ISKCON you hear that, oh well, you know, that's something that Prabhupada wanted to do, but actually he didn't quite get time to do it, so we'll just chant Hare Krishna and don't worry about the Varnashram system. But Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Chatur Varnam Mahi Shristam, he says, I created this system. And if Krishna generally creates something, it just doesn't go out the back door. So where is the Varnashram system now? Is it something that, I mean, okay, we've got chanting Hare Krishna here, and then we've got the Varnashram system. And there's always this, you know, there's those who say, well, the Varnashram system should be established, and those who say, well, just chant Hare Krishna, it'll be alright. Don't worry about it. Which party do you belong to? But the Varnashram system, actually, because it's there, it's always there, it has been created by Krishna. So it's not that we have to create the Varnashram system or re-establish. But what needs to be done, we need to understand why this legs of religion or this Varnashram system doesn't appear to be present. And this is because once we understand the destruction of the legs of religion, does anyone know how you destroy the legs of religion? Three ways. Pretty simple. What's the first one? Yeah, but it comes with a certain frame of mind. First one is? Yes, pride. Pride is the first thing that goes. Second thing? Undue association with the opposite sex. And third thing? Which comes in many forms in Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga, they're very good at invented new ways of intoxication. So Prabhupada describes in the first canto, intoxication means like, you know, the man, the drinking wine. He says, pride, he says, the pauper is proud of his penny. In Kali Yuga, this is very prominent. I don't know if you've noticed, sometimes you walk in shopping. I was walking in a shopping center in Stockland, in Burleigh Heads, and I was noticing one thing, I said, God, people are ugly. Not that I'm not, but, you know, I was just thinking, you know, you look at people and sometimes you look at, you know, the best people that, you know, eat meat and engage in all sorts of sinful activities. The devotees are actually look very beautiful. They have effulgence about them. You know, people say that in the street, you look very happy, like happy people. And I remember even sometimes I was distributing books with Rupa Raghunath, and they always ask to confuse us. So you look like your brothers. I mean, I don't even look like Rupa Raghunath, but because you get that same kind of brightness, Krishna is there. But the people are really ugly sometimes, you know. Some people that perform sinful activities, they become dark, they become grey, they have no aura about them. And then also sometimes people think they're very wealthy, very rich. But then, in a swipe of the stock market, whoop, it's all gone down the drain. And then, you know, you can go through everything like this. Even intelligence, people think they're so intelligent. But then, the new theory on something comes up and it's all gone. But people are proud of this. The Kali Yuga are very proud. And they will only live for like 70 years, 60 years. But hey, man, you know. What is this? In Satya Yuga, 100,000 years. So you live for 70 years? No, very good. I'm very. One lady in France is 120 years old. But we're very proud of this. So pride is actually a big one. And this is how, you know, it says pride before the fall. It's described oftentimes like a balloon, you know, when you blow the balloon, then you come with a tiny little thorn, you know. And you just go, boom! And yeah, off it goes. It's like the frog in a well story. And then after that comes, of course, the too much association with the opposite sex. It gets rid of cleanliness. Because what happens is that when you associate with the opposite sex too much, one becomes the Lord. You know, like, you're actually recognizing my true glories. Actually, I found someone, you know, the perfect match. You heard about the perfect match? Sometimes we do astrology to find the right person. Why are we so eager to find that right person? Because that right person will actually glorify me, will worship me, and every day will offer me praise to recognize my true beauty, nature, and abilities to survive in this material world. Therefore, that person is perfect. Therefore, I seek to associate with that person. But if you associate with a Prabhu's, that's a different thing. Slap on the back and you'll be alright. So, undue association with opposite sex is too much. Still, within the Balashram system, there is certain allocation for this. And finally, intoxication. Why is it that people are so eager to intoxicate? Yes, because if you don't intoxicate, you look at the stark reality of the material world. My God, it's painful. And the first thing before painful is boring. How many people keep their jobs for more than 2 years? No one. Who can work for the same person day after day, 9 to 5, so fast? Especially most devotees, they don't have a job. I remember Mukunda Maharaj giving a class in the 80s in Sydney, and he was talking about two devotees that joined, and he said something that shocked me then, but he said that actually they were qualified to become devotees because they couldn't get a job. Then I thought about it. Actually, who'd want to be, you know, facing that reality every day, that being dragged by the same person and told what to do? So then, people to avoid this and to avoid the very, you know, the material world is described as being inexorable. It's grinding. It's like a big wheel that's grinding. So to avoid that, then. One has to take intoxication. But intoxication comes in many forms. Yeah, watch a bit of a movie here, drink a bit of wine, do a bit of this, a bit of that. Like when you go to the service stations now, You know, before the biggest seller was like something like Coca-Cola, or maybe it still is. But now there's a big competitor that's coming out, and that is, you don't go to service stations. Guarana, V, Mava, you don't know, you're too saintly to know these things. Energy drinks. So they're the big sellers, they're the number one sellers in the counters at the service stations. But now has come the competition, that's the little shot, which contains no less than 180 milligrams of caffeine. And with this, you can certainly perceive the material world in a very different way. And after all, it's not so bad to be here. Therefore, give me more. Never mind that it saps all the calcium out of your bones. And when that little shot is over, you feel a little depressed and just have another one. So these are the things that really destroy, and it starts with pride. And pride is one's over-evaluation of one's values in life. Overestimation, Prabhupada says. One's overestimation of one's values in life. So, when I was talking about the Varnashram, is that one should see that the Varnashram is always here. But what gets in the way to perceive the Varnashram is the pride. Because Varnashram is divided in four Varnas and four Ashrams. But the four Varnas, it's very simple. Not that we have to classify ourselves as Brahmanas or Kshatriyas or like that, because in Kali Yuga it's not, you don't have many qualifications. But at least one should be a little introspective to see what can I actually do. Well, I know what I want to do, and I know what I think I can do, and I know what others should be doing. That's a good one too. Especially, you know, I know, especially on the internet, we're really eager to tell what the others should be doing. But to be a little introspective, and what am I actually able to do? And not only am I able to do, but what am I able to maintain for the next 50, 60 years? With that little introspection, one should see that one's values of life are reduced to, certainly a very humble amount. That is one thing. And the second thing is the ability to recognize what someone else can do. So then what it does is that it creates a boundary. I don't know, I'm sure you've heard of the area of influence and the area of concern. I'm sure you've all heard of that. So you've got the area of concern. You can be concerned about the whole world. But can you influence the whole world? Like some people, they're concerned about what goes on in ISKCON worldwide. But then when you look at their house, or their living quarters, it's like, sorry, man. Or when you look at their own lives, or how they chant, or how they act themselves. So one should see that. And when one perceives someone else's ability and one's own ability, then he creates a boundary. And that boundary is called respect. So Varnashram actually begins with respect and humility. When one is able to find out what one is actually worth, truly, my good self, and what someone else is worth, then we will see that this person can do that and I can do that. That is the beginning of perceiving Varnashram. The ability to perceive one's own ability and someone else's ability. And once we do this, we respect. We do not step into someone else's territory. So if you want to do a little exercise, you can simply think, can I teach and can I educate now and for the rest of my life? Yes, well, I've got Brahminical qualifications. No, next. Can I administrate and deal with people now and with the rest of my life? Yes. Well, I must be some kind of administrator. No. Next. Can I make money and provide money in large quantities to help others? Yes, good. I must be some kind of Vaishya. No, next. Can I help and cooperate with those who are doing these things? Yes, very good. Very nice. You become a dasanudas. No, ooh, you have some serious trouble because you've got to be one of those four. You cannot be something else. Otherwise, you're not human, as described in the Bhagavatam. So that introspection is necessary. Therefore, the first thing that comes is humility. And the ability to recognize someone else's qualities is born within oneself. If I do not have those qualities myself, it will be very difficult to recognize them in someone else, because I don't even know what I'm looking for. If I say to someone else, well, you know, if you say to the temple president, you can't manage the temple. So you'd say, well, if the temple president was not humble, but sure, he's very humble, he'll say, well, how much experience do you have doing that? How do you know how to do this? So, humility is the number one thing. Therefore, it is said that by the simple process, this is why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is genius again. Do you know why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't appear here as an incarnation of God in Kali Yuga? Why did he didn't come and present himself with his Sudarshan chakra and his godly features? It's because in Kali Yuga there's plenty of them already. It's full. The God position is full. So therefore Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears as a servant. That's why he appears as a devotee. Because when he comes to Kali Yuga, the position is already taken. Everybody is God here. Do you notice? Everybody wants to be God anyway. But he introduces that humility, that prideless factor, comes in and says this is... So therefore he introduces the chanting of Hare Krishna. Because through that chanting of Hare Krishna, one can actually cleanse the delusion and see, perceive what reality is. I perceive actually I'm just a little soul. I'm just a little humble soul, a little servant of Krishna. And what happens is that modern civilization has cheated everyone by creating shortage of commodities. And what is the main commodity in Kali Yuga? It's actually happiness. And how do they cheat everyone? Because they tell everyone that happiness can be obtained by material advancement. So everyone is craving for material, let's get a new this, a new that, and electricity, and the cars, and that will make you happy. But that is cheating. That is robbing someone from his own commodities. We know very well, according to Bhagavatam, that real happiness is obtained by being austere, clean, merciful, and truthfulness. That's how one becomes happy. But meanwhile, the modern society is preaching to us, saying, actually, you can be happy if you get a new car. You get this or you get that. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes and says, no, actually, by chanting Hare Krishna, this is how you become happy. But to do this, it requires one thing that is the most important thing, and that is cooperation. Because Sanatana Goswami was asked by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what is the most important thing? And then Sanatana Goswami answered, is chanting Hare Krishna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no. Then what is the most important thing? Eating prasadam? No. He says, actually, it's the association of devotees. Because without devotees, there is no chanting. You will not chant Hare Krishna. There's only Madhavendra Puri and maybe Advaita Acharya who are able to chant Hare Krishna. We're able to chant Hare Krishna on their own. Everyone else needs the association of devotees. Therefore, cooperation is the number one factor. Even the deities will not be there if the devotees are not here. The deities are only here because the devotees are here worshipping them. No deity will stand out there in the bush on their own. They're buried. No, no. But if it wasn't for the devotees, there is no deities. So therefore the devotee is most important, devotee association is most important than the chanting of the Hare Krishna. With the chanting of Hare Krishna one becomes cleansed. By this cleaning one can perceive one's real position. And real position we can also perceive others' positions and develop a respect. And when that respect begins, then Varnashram is established. Then I do this, you do that. So this is the situation in Satya Yuga. And this is how Krishna is worshipped. Am I going over time here? Okay. I better finish now. Any questions or comments?
Earlier in the class you mentioned about, maybe I misunderstood, you talked about people who were living in Satya Yuga. Did anyone who lived in Satya Yuga take affection when Gautama and went to
No, it says by cultural standing they were sinless.
So if they're sinless, they wouldn't have to take birth again?
Well, no, because by cultural standing means, you know, like ISKCON. You're part of ISKCON to the degree that you're sinless within one's heart. So in Satya Yuga, they're sinless mostly. Of course, in mind, they're, as you say, Dharma here. They follow the Dharma religiously. But within the heart, there is some desire that doesn't quite fit this. And because of that, they may not all return back to Godhead, although most of them yes do. But some are inclined to experience a greater interaction with material nature. So your question is, do they all return to Godhead? Is that what it is?
Well, because if they all exist, are free from all sins.
Yeah.
I presume that if one is sinless, one will not have to take birth again. Could you close that door, please? There's too many conversations.
I think just the fact of, you know, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 12th chapter, that the primary occupation is to always think of him. Then he said, if you can't do that, then do sadhana. And then he goes on, etc., etc. So, if one is constantly thinking of Krishna, then obviously he's sinless. But one who is sinless simply by social arrangement or by, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that one of the anathas is fear of ostracism. Right? So, fear of ostracism can also make you act in a sinless way. But does that mean that you know, given a chance? Like some people, you know, they don't waste their money because they don't have any. Or some people, they're not promiscuous or anything like that because, you know, they're just probably some bum in the street or something like that who has no options. So, but if given the opportunity, would one still be sinless? So this is what is meant probably by cultural standing. So there is being sinless in mind and in activity. Of course, one leads to the other. But, do they all return back to Godhead? Yeah, I'd say so. They do, but except for those who want to experience a bit more interaction with the material world. Is that what you mean? Does that make any sense?
Yeah. I have another question. You were explaining how one can look within and consider what his status may be. And consider whether one is an administrator, an educator, a moneymaker, or a servant. Of course, if one is dedicated his life to being a pujari or a cook or a preacher, saying it's unheard of, we'll distribute it. Is that necessary? I mean, where would that fit into the scheme?
It definitely fits in, because to do that one needs cooperation. To do that one has to listen to his authorities. That in itself, there you go. Someone has to do something. So, where do I fit? How can I serve? Basically, that is the question. How can I serve? Even those who are leading, they're only servants. They're only manifesting an environment or maintaining an infrastructure for everyone to serve the Supreme Lord. So, yeah, it definitely fits in. You know, one has to follow orders, whether one is a pujari. Who is that order coming from? Some administrator. So it has to be there. Why are we following the order of the administrator? Because the whole purpose of the Hare Krishna movement is to preach the Bhagavatam. So we are serving the preachers. You should know that everyone, every single person in the Hare Krishna movement is actually helping for that purpose, and that purpose is to preach the Srimad Bhagavatam. Whether one has a remote activity, simply as, you know, cleaning or anything else, you mentioned pujari, but ultimately the activity must be that Srimad Bhagavatam is delivered. That's why it says in the Nectar of Devotion that it says that when the pujari is performing aarti, he can stop and step out of the altar during the aarti, although it says in many places in scriptures that one should not stop while the worship is going on. But one can do that only in one condition, and that is when a guest comes in. When a guest comes in, he can stop and offer the guest some whatever is required. This is understanding that is not, we're not just ritualistic, we're not just doing a ritual, just coming here worshipping the deities every day. Every single activity that is performed in this temple is meant that this Srimad Bhagavatam, or the knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam, is given to those who don't have it. So therefore, if a guest comes in, yeah, if there's no one here, receive the guest. Because that is the purpose of it. Otherwise we become, you know, ritualistic. Simply we do things for the sake of doing it, without understanding the purpose. But understanding the purpose, the Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to be out amongst those who need it, then everything makes sense. Everything comes, you know, when we cook prasadam, we clean after the feast, we organize the feast, we are typing away, anything. So therefore, yes, we do fit into those categories quite easily. But sometimes out of pride, we will not want to fit in the category that we belong, and then we become useless. We become totally useless because we want to be something that we cannot be. Not that we cannot because it's prohibited, but we cannot because in this particular birth we do not have the ability to do it. Therefore, anyone that has joined the temple would know that the first thing that they do, they come in and just wash pots. Isn't it? You've all washed pots, haven't you? I think Mahatmaji, you've washed pots too. I remember seeing you in King's Cross.
No.
It wasn't you. But, yeah, because it starts there. Like Sadaputta Prabhu, who passed away, he joined in our... Do you remember where he joined, Sadaputta? But he was there, and he's a PhD in chemistry. So he joined the temple, and he was just washing pots. And for a long time, like a month, he was just washing pots. Didn't ask for anything. And then at some point, the editor of the newsletter was short of an article, and he just didn't know. You know, sometimes you're short of an article, you go around asking for someone, you know, can you write something? So he went up to Sadaputta and said, can you write something? And he said, yeah, if you want to write something. And then he wrote this most amazing article. And it was time. I said, what are you doing washing pots, you know? You should be doing something else. But the devotee is humble. He just takes that position without pride and cooperates. And in this way only one can facilitate the Srimad Bhagavatam, the purpose of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and that is to teach Krishna consciousness. One should understand that it's very important. But yeah, the pujari does fit. Everyone fits in that sense. But not in the caste sense, whereas I am this, you know, and And basically it means that I am so proud of being this that there's a pride that comes in with the caste, so the caste system. But we don't preach these things. No, we don't preach that we are Brahman. Of course not. We just preach the chanting of Hare Krishna. But within oneself we should know what our position is, because it does help. It does help.
A great example I always think with this kind of our spiritual that's going around Australia and all the hundreds, thousands of people that are being given Krishna consciousness, a very superb preaching program.
Right.
And the only reason that program is able to go on is because of talents like Jai Shri, who was donated, you know, $250,000 for it to happen. From
exactly.
An expert business acumen. You know, she's a Vaishnava, she's an expert businesswoman. She has all these boutiques and all the profits from the boutiques to the preaching. So that's a perfect example. Some of these obviously of a Vaishnava nature. I mean, I couldn't go and make money out of that. But she does just like that. But she's been blessed with that ability to be a moneymaker and a Vaishnava, an expert businesswoman. And she just, all those funds go towards the preaching.
And she gets all the benefit from Maharaj's preaching.
Yeah.
Now, would Jayashree be, you know, well, I want to be the temple president, or I want to be the preacher, and she'd be out there in the streets trying to sell books. I don't think she'd be as efficient. So therefore, it's very important to hear from authorities and understand what the authorities want us to do. Why is that? Because the authorities know in a very short time what we are able to do, and they will engage us accordingly. And that brings about satisfaction. The satisfaction to be part of a movement with a purpose. So yeah, this is the real Balashram. This is the daily Balashram.
It really feels the quality of work is other than Dhamma. It's still there. Maybe to take second initiation. How does that work?
Well, Prabhupada did say that not everyone can take second initiation. But mostly with the process of Krishna consciousness, everyone becomes a Brahmana naturally. Though the inclination to act in certain activities may not be there due to one's, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes as two things, as the conditioned nature and the constitutional nature. So constitutional, of course, is be a servant of Krishna. But the conditioned nature is there. So he says when the two are together, parallel, it's very nice. But sometimes they're opposite. Sometimes you have a butcher who will join the Hare Krishna movement, you know. So that's the conditioned nature. So it's not quite in line with Vaishnava principles. But sometimes one may be an educator or teacher, then it's in line. But still, there's no advantage one being one or the other. Simply that maybe the grass is drier with the teacher, so it'll light on fire. So if one follows the process of Krishna consciousness diligently, one will develop those qualities, Brahminical qualities, because they come together. So by developing those Brahminical qualities, then gradually one can take second initiation. But the main thing is to become to cooperate and to become a servant, and by that attitude, by developing an attitude, you know, Prabhupada in the Gurukuls, he always wanted character before curriculum, because developing the character of a Brahmana means, you know, being austere, clean, merciful. That this, you know, this is actually how one becomes a Brahmana. So your question was, if everyone can become, is it a Brahmana?
Well,
yeah,
not
everyone is an educator. Yeah, but Daivi Vanashram means, you know, Vanashram runs vertical, Daivi Vanashram runs horizontal. In a sense that whether one is acting as a Shudra or acting as a Brahmana, it's the same level. In a Vanashram, it's vertical. Like, Brahmana is up there, and he's down, obviously. But your purpose in the Krishna consciousness movement is Brahminical, because you are preaching. Okay, let's say you're just washing pots, right? But if you follow the equation, why are you washing pots for? Because you're serving prasadam. Who are you serving prasadam to? For people to know about Krishna. So this is part of a brahminical move. So you're part of that brahminical move. You're assisting in that brahminical move. So everyone is a brahman. Horizontal, not vertical. So this is a, you know, even though one may not have the brain, the capacity, intellectual capacity to do it, but you can be part of that, which makes you also a brahmana. But you'll take second initiation, it's alright. About the association with devotees.
Yes, the
Chaitanya Charitamrita. The Chaitanya Charitamrita. Actually, the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita is about that. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was always with his devotees, always consulting with his devotees. And Prabhupada's last words when he was leaving this planet were, please cooperate. Because everyone, well, not everyone, but some people can perform austerities and go to the forest and deal with one's own mind. But to deal with everyone else's mind, that is a real austerity. And the association of devotees, Prabhupada did say, cooperate. Always cooperate. And this is all over the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I'll get chastised.
When
commentary,
when Krishna, the commentary is how many most important but strong. That's why one of the five of us, how Prabhupada put this almost in the morning program.
Yes.
Because he wants all of us to preach. His mood is that he wants to speak for this honor. He wants to know how to do that.
Yes.
He says, I have to meet our first. So that's my comment. My question is, maybe I think because I came late, that why in Satyuga Lord is worshipped as Hansa? Any particular reason?
Pure. Purity.
Purity.
It's a sign of the swan. It's a sign of purity. Purity means dharma is all mental activities are directed towards the Lord. No other.
And maybe intelligence also, because Hansa is able to.
Hansa is what?
Intelligence.
Yes.
Between
milk and water.
So
yes. They know, yes. Very good point.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.